So it's now going to be my pleasure to introduce our first speaker of the day, Sarah Elsey, who you probably will all know. Sarah is the head of applied analytics at RACQ. She's been there about 7 years and a couple of days, I think. RACQ is the largest personal lines insurer in Queensland and Australia's sixth biggest insurer. Sarah leads the team responsible for risk, cost and behavioural modelling and pricing of natural perils. Sarah is also responsible for loss reserving and fraud analytics. Sarah has 15 years experience in insurance. She started her career as a life insurance actuary with MLC before moving into general insurance with IAG and 2011 off to RACQ. So please welcome Sarah.
Hi everyone, it's nice to meet you all. So as Jeremy mentioned, I work for RACQ. We're a small, sixth largest in Australia, but a small mutual, and all of our exposures really are up in Queensland. We have about 20% of the market there. And for us, natural perils are very significant indeed, so roughly half of the home premium that we would charge would go towards meeting retained costs and the costs of our reinsurance XOL program. So for us, getting pricing right, you know, not just from an anti-selection perspective, but in terms of our interaction as a mutual, particularly with our customers, is very important indeed. And we've been through quite a journey. When I started at RACQ, we didn't cover flood, and actually the day I went to have my interview with RACQ, I couldn't get on the plane because they were going through the 2011 floods, and they didn't cover flood at that point, and it was a very contentious issue and difficult for their customers, and after we went through that experience, it was one of the first tasks that we had to deal with in the team was to offer flood as standard for all policies written by RACQ. And that was interesting and challenging just a fantastic introduction, I think. Our perspective was to get it as right as we possibly could at the risk address. So for us, cyclone is the greater peril in terms of costs, but I'll start the presentation with flood because it lends itself, it's the peril that's most appropriate for risk address pricing, and then we can talk a little bit about cyclone. So on this first page, I'm just giving a bit of an overview. For some of you, this sort of these sorts of charts will be very familiar indeed, and for others it's just an introduction to the methods that we use to price flood. So we start with information from the BOM, IFD curves. They show, if you can see on the green curve, it might be a little bit difficult to see, but on the left-hand side, the green curve shows the 1% AEP. So one in every 100 years, you'll get rainfall. It might be 200 mils over 24 hours, or it might be 100 mils over an hour, and that's enough to be a one in 100 year event. We run that through certain in the models that we use at the moment, they're relatively simple models in that they assume static conditions for moisture in the soil and other land use parameters that explain how the water runs off into the catchment. And from that you can produce what's in the centre diagram, which shows actually for it's a location in Queensland. Charlie's Creek runs, it's a tributary of the Condamine River, and it runs through a town called Charleville. And for those who know Queensland, you know that Charleville is a location that floods frequently. They get quite severe flooding there. And so this is the diagram in the centre is the 1% AEP raster for Charleville. And because the sort of point of this discussion is how do you move from things like this into more interesting and specific pricing. There's a red square that will sort of become relevant in the next slide. It focuses a little bit more specifically on some locations in Charleville. So once you've got that information that basically shows how high the river gets every, you know, one in 100 years, one in 50 years, one in 20 years, and even less frequently than that, you can convert it into a loss as a percentage of sum insured using vulnerability curves. There are good vulnerability curves available from Geoscience Australia, and I've included the curve on the furthest curve, just showing basically how much difference there is between a one and a two-storey property. There is a significant difference in the vulnerability, and in between I've shown our loss experience, I think it was for Bundaberg, and it shows Bundaberg flooded in 2013. I think it was a one in 100 year flood. And that was off the back of, must have been Cyclone Marsha. The guys might correct me. So Bundaberg flooded and it was a one in 100 year flood, and it basically demonstrates that we had a mix of one and two story buildings. And so using all of that information, you can get pricing accurate to address level. You basically have to integrate over all probabilities to produce an expected loss at each address, and then maybe peg to an overall AAL at a higher level. So what can we do from there, from that base level of information? I mentioned in the previous slide that we would focus... it was not Charleville, it was Chinchilla, excuse me. same difference. We can focus in on a specific address because it demonstrates what we can do to be as accurate as we possibly can at risk address level. If you might be sort of starting out on a flood journey, and I know many have been there, you might start with in the centre diagram on the previous slide. I was saying you run the water through a catchment and determine how high the flood water gets. It's important in that in that part of the modelling process to have a look at the underlying topography, and the more accurate you can get the underlying topography, the better. So 30 metre SRTM is a standard source, and if you're pricing at the centre point of the risk address and using what equates to 30 metre grids of SRTM, then you would be looking at the yellow dot in the centre of that graphic. But there is much more accurate information available, and the diagram showing the map of Australia shows that LIDAR is available, especially in Queensland. We've got excellent coverage along the coast, so 91% of GNAFs. New South Wales is also very good, in other states not as good, but they'll get there eventually. So if you want to move away from SRTN, which we all do, then you would be looking at LIDAR. And it just shows that for this particular address, which is a rural property, if you were pricing based on SRTM, you would be looking at 40 centimetre flood heights pretty much across the curve. But if you move to LIDAR, that reduces to zero. So that might change your flood premium from, I don't know, maybe something very close to $1,800 for this address down to maybe $100 per annum. And then if you wanted to do better again, and this is one thing that we're actively looking at the moment, you can purchase data. You can manually, historically we've done it, to move from the centre point of the risk address to the centre point of the building on the property. And especially, certainly not in urban areas, but in rural areas where especially flood-prone properties there's a tendency to build at the highest point on a large block, then moving to the centre point of the building itself makes a significant difference, and for this property it would reduce the flood premium down to zero. So there's other things as well that we can do. We account for all the levies that are available. We talk actively with the councils, and they make their models available to us, and we blend it in with our own data. So we've allowed for Roma, Gundawindi, there's another one or two. And we also use council studies where we feel they're superior to our work. So I mentioned that in building this model with the very extensive help of Willis Ree, it is a simple model, but there are starting models are being made available to us now by the NFID, and it's a situation where you would rely preferentially on NFID in preference to your own work, because, for instance, in the Brisbane River study that was released, I think May last year, they've gone quite a step beyond using a simple model. It's really the best model of its kind in Australia, and it's very extensive, and no doubt more accurate than what we have available to us in our simple model even. So there are times when the NFID is excellent. There's more and more data becoming available all the time, and this may come up in Tim Andrews' presentation. You'd probably be aware that Geoscape, and when I mentioned that we were moving towards the centre point of the building, Geoscape data that's available doesn't just show the centre point of the height of the property at the centre point of the building. It shows the building, the polygon of the building envelope. It shows tree coverage, solar panels, pools. Anything that you could possibly want is becoming available in Geoscape, and there are other providers as well that we've used specifically in Queensland. And as you can imagine, this is just becoming the way of the future, I suppose. And probably the last thing we do for flood is very extensive monitoring by our view of flood risk by catchment, and the diagram that shows, I think it's probably an inner west location of Brisbane. It shows what our portfolio looked like at the start of the whole flood pricing exercise in 2011. Red dots indicate very severe properties exposed to very severe flood risk, and if it's a dark green, then we consider it to be a low flood risk. And through pricing action, where we try to charge as accurate a technical premium as we possibly can for perils, our book has been reshaped, I suppose you would say. I don't know where those customers have gone to. I hope Suncorp. But who can say? So the next one that I'll move on to is cyclone. As I mentioned, another big peril for us, but doesn't quite lend itself to the same extent of pricing at risk address. The data that you can get, obviously, if you sort of went in order, you would be looking at flood and then bushfire and then maybe sort of cyclone and hail and the like, where information ALs are more available at postcode level. And we use outputs, again, from our friends at Willis, from RMS and from Miriam, and get a view of the AEL at postcode level, and then do our best to take into account for cyclone as opposed to flood, much more so the engineering components of the property are very significant in terms of sort of pricing signals. But we do rely on RMS and Miriam, as I mentioned, and it's sort of quite interesting. RMS are releasing their model, I think next year now is the date, their updated cyclone model. And really the information that's available to RMS, you would say in the last 40 years we've been through probably a cyclone drought, even though, you know, we've been exposed to Larry in 2006, Yassi 2011, you know, we would have had Marsha, Oswald, the list is endless, but it's still a relative cyclone drought, and it just shows these, I've included these charts just to give you a sense of how things might have looked in the, you know, 40 years leading up to the 1970s, when there were cyclones much more actively in the south of Queensland. And that sort of long-term view that RMS and other modelling firms would have to take into account. But there's a massive variation for us year on year. You have to take a longer-term view, but it's quite interesting the sort of what they'd have to be allowing for and how different the last 40 years have been to periods before that time. I've also included, just for those who are sort of interested in the loss experience of a cyclone-exposed insurer in Queensland. I don't know how many people might be, hopefully a lot of this room. But I thought I'd include this slide because it was quite interesting for us when we were going through our repricing exercise for cyclone to look at the exposures that we had for Yassi and Marsha. So Yassi was the much more significant event. You know, the losses that were generated out of Marsha were roughly half of the Yassi losses. But we really had a lot of exposures. I've put the Saffir-Simpson wind speeds down, you know, on the x-axis there. So really, for Marsha, all of our exposures were less than 74 miles per hour. They were, you know, roughly equates to maybe 110 kilometres an hour. We really didn't have any exposures in what you would even call a mild kind of cyclone range for on the US scale, which is what's used by RMS and all the modellers. For Yassi, we touched on some exposures in the true US Cat 4, you know, 220 kilometres an hour range, and that was interesting to see the loss experience for those properties. As you can see, we didn't even sort of get to the 15% damage ratio, even for those properties that were exposed to very high wind speeds. But we don't have a lot of experience at that level, and I've included a damage ratio for from some engineering studies that I found, which it also goes to show when you're relying on that US data and how interesting it would be to kind of look more closely, and I'm sure RMS are doing this, at Australian loss experience. So, what did we do once we got beyond AALs at postcode level? We looked at every factor we had available to us from our loss experience and filtered out those that made a difference and those that didn't. So within postcode, we take account of relative distance to coast. That is significant. Once you can see in this chart, we've looked at our exposures in cyclone-exposed areas. So we're sort of talking within 75 kilometres of the coast and north of Bundaberg. And it just shows you the lost relativities from our experience for relative distance to coast within a postcode. So the closer you are, obviously, to the coast, very, very close, then, you know, the factors relative to, you know, 5 kilometres away, that's significant and should, in my view, be allowed for in pricing. And the closer that you get, if you have to allow for things like storm surge, are also important. Construction year, very, very important. I'm sure you all know. You can see that there's a large difference, you know, for very old properties and the more newly built, newly constructed properties. However, you do sort of get this, perhaps not so much up north, but you do get these mixed construction types, which are, perhaps it'll be interesting to see Daniel's size and the extent to which there's that allows wind to penetrate into a building. Roof type, massive. If you've got a fibre roof, very, very expensive. And wall type is also significant. Slope is another significant factor. I didn't include that here, but it's not quite as impressive as the difference between, you know, wall type relativities. So that's what we try to do at RACQ, come up with the best address level pricing that we possibly can. And we sort of take a technical view to the extent that we possibly can for natural perils as well. That's about it.